We've been trying to get to some substantive stuff here on All Things Apostolic for a couple weeks, and today we're going to hit a little bit of it, so stay tuned with us. Welcome to All Things Apostolic on August the 25th, Monday, and we are glad that you are with us in the year of our Lord 2025. Hard to believe for me. I know this is like a broken record, but it's hard for me to believe that it is almost September. And all the bills that I paid in August are going to be due again in another week. However, a lot of good things have been accomplished. We're excited to see them, not only locally, but but regionally, nationally, and of course, internationally. Some remarkable things that God is doing. I find it, speaking of remarkable, I find it remarkable that there are approximately right at 700 million people in the world who claim to be Pentecostal. Think about that. 700 million is 10% of the world's population, or close thereabout. And you never read about it in the news. You never hear special articles written about it. I mean, maybe there are somewhere and I don't see them. But we are in what has been determined several years ago. Somebody wrote about it, not a long time ago, but several years, mentioned that this is the largest religious phenomenon in the world, and also that it is the largest of any social or religious movement in the world. And it continues to grow very, very rapidly. This book that I read, one of the books I read now is a little older, probably 2016, along in there. But from 1970 to 2016, his statistics were that the rate of growth of Pentecostalism was 7% a year. Think about that. Since 1970, it had continued to grow 7% a year. And there wasn't any other of the major religions of the world that had grown 2% a year, and very few that had even grown 1% a year. And non-Pentecostal Christianity grew also, but it wasn't anywhere near the rate of Pentecostal Christianity. So, it's just amazing the things that God is doing. Now, I don't know, when people say they're Pentecostal, I mean, out of 700 million, there's going to be all kinds of stuff in there. But nevertheless, that's about the best you can quantify on a global scale because it's so massive. And that's a pretty impressive figure in that I know that there are tens of millions, I'm sure, several hundreds of millions, without any question in my mind, that are apostolic. And no one organization encompasses all these people, obviously, but it is an amazing thing. So in that context, yesterday locally here, we had our All Nations Sunday. And we have an All-Nations Sunday every year. It is one service at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It is a Christian concert. The church does it all, or at least it has the last several years, as far as I know, always. But it's not like somebody comes in. And it was incredible. The house was full. I'm guessing I think our sanctuary seats 2,400, so there was probably, 2,100 maybe, I don't know, because there was people outside, a bunch of people outside working, because at All Nations Sunday, we had 30 food booths from different nations of the world. They got a sign on the front of their little tent and where they're from, and there's a little book you get at the end of service with little tabs that, I don't know exactly how it works, but little tabs you show at the booth that's in the book, and you get free food. You get the taste of food from all these nations. There were hundreds and hundreds of people out there and guests everywhere. And somebody will come to God. Somebody will be one. It is a non-threatening environment in which we just say, get them in the door and get them acclimated to being inside of the building so they don't drive by for 20 years and say, I wonder what's in that building. And they break the fear of going into that which is new. And they meet a lot of people that are extremely friendly to them and that are loving to them. And so, and then they get free food, and it's served. It's just cool the way it's all served. No need to go into all that, but it's just really cool. And they come back. And so it's not like we catch all those fish the first time that the hook is dropped in the water, because the first time they come, the hook is not really in the water. It's fish food that's thrown in the water. And it's good music, and it's Holy Ghost music. And so you throw the fish food in, then when they come, you drop the hook in, and God catches them. Or if there's a whole bunch of them, you get the net. So anyway, it was a great day. There was people there, prominent people there, as well as just people that were just glad to be anywhere. And people stayed outside after it was over for a couple hours or more, maybe more. They just wouldn't leave. And they were just excited to be there. And so we shook hands with people and greeted people and met a bunch of new people. So because this is a people business, Jesus died. He didn't die much for trees and rocks, but he died for people. So anyway, it was great. It was great. Just giving you a little review here today. Been working on a book. Didn't intend to work on a book on eschatology. What we did is we are starting the graduate degree, the master's degree in leadership here at Wilson University. Of course, it's all fully accredited. We're starting that in January of 26. So if you're interested, go to the website and ask questions. Somebody call you, somebody talk to you, somebody tell you whatever information you may need about that. But anyway, so we were developing an eschatology class, and that's the doctrine of last things. It's the biblical presentation of what happens at the end of the age. There are five major ages, and we are in what is called the present, obviously, age. In fact, the Bible calls it the present evil age. But this, an age is from one major earth geological upheaval to the next. And so there was the creative age, the upheavals given to us in Genesis 1 and 2. The chaos that covered the earth, and out of that there is some major eruption in which land pushes its way up and appears, and the rest of the Genesis 1 begins to tell us the story. And there is called the Antediluvian Age that goes from there to the flood, which was a major radical change in the face of the earth. It's interesting that in the Antediluvian age, that is the age up to the flood after the creative age, it's interesting that the Bible is pretty lean in its description of that age. It only gives us like two chapters, and then comes the flood. But the Bible tells us that it was very bad. And some of the hints and indicators that tell us how bad it was is that it was so radical. This is radical, that it changed the lifespan of human beings from nearly 1,000 years to 70 years. That's a radical change, more radical than the geological changes, perhaps. And the entire race, secondly, entire race except for eight people, is wiped out. So the perversions and the violence and the man just wasn't equipped at that point with the knowledge to face the principalities and powers that had been in existence before man was ever created. He just wasn't capable of facing that. He had conscience, but he didn't. Conscience wasn't enough. He was naive, and so he fell to the evil side in a way that was devastating and fatal. And then from the antediluvian age to the second coming of Jesus is the present age. And we are presently, obviously, living in the present, in the present age. And so when you talk about eschatology, you're talking about the end of the present age. Now, look, what I just told you is pretty simple. And there's some of you that didn't even know that. Well, why would you want to live the rest of your life without knowing those things? Get in the classes and learn something more than what we already know. That doesn't mean you don't already know a lot of stuff about a lot of stuff, but we also need to know, you know, the book. So the present age is extends from Noah and his family till the second coming of Jesus. And its primary focus is the nations of the world, which equates to the people of the world. But the primary focus is the nations of the world. And those nations are developed like the story of Noah coming out of the flood is in Genesis chapter 9. And then the story and the list of the compilation of the nations that came out of Noah and his sons. There are 70 of them, and they are found in Genesis chapter 10. So you can just see from Genesis chapter 1 the unfolding of this story. And those 70 nations fell under the leadership of one named Nimrod. And his mother's name was Semiramis. And they're not sure, but what his mother was also his wife. I'm not positive about that. But that was a long time ago. But anyway, they started the world religion out of which all world religions that are not Christianity come. The gods of other nations of the world are gods that were developed by Nimrod and Semiramis under Babylon. And so Babylon became, all the way back in Genesis chapter 10, it became one of the first cities created in the world. Babylon and Nineveh were two of the first cities that were ever created. And Nimrod was behind this. He established this religious system that has permeated the earth. Oftentimes, I'll take a dollar bill, and if you look on the back of it, at the top of the pyramid, there's a picture of a pyramid on the dollar bill. At the top of the pyramid, the top little section has an eyeball looking at you, and it's called the Eye of Horus. That comes into our American historical culture all the way back from Nimrod and from Semiramis. And it comes from that religion. And that religion was personified at the Tower of Babel. Now, they tell us the Tower of Babel is still there. I mean, we don't know that it's Tower of Babel, but there's a bunch of them. There wasn't just one tower. And they are still there in the desert out there. And you can visit them if you don't get killed. But there's a man, I think it was Henry Layard, somebody went out there in the 1800s and documented all of it and took some pictures and so forth. So really, who owns that country now? It'd be Iran or Iraq, I think. And as a result of that, they ought to do a tourist deal. I need to write them a letter and tell them, hey, you guys, you're out of money. You got bombed. You lost your nuclear weapons. You want to make some money, get some tour buses and run them out there and show people these things. So, so anyway, the word Nimrod in Hebrew means rebel. Rebel. He was a rebel. He was the most notorious human rebel, perhaps in history. Because Babylon starts in Genesis chapter 10, and you find it all the way through the Old Testament as an enemy to the people of God. You find it even found in the New Testament. And when you get to the book of Genesis, it is that great city, that wicked city, Babylon, found in Revelation chapter 17 and chapter 18. And which many Bible scholars say one chapter is commercial Babylon and the next chapter is religious Babylon. But anyway, it all falls, and the merchants and business people of the earth weep when it falls. Alas, the great city is fallen. And so many people believe it represents the entire commerce system that the earth has been based upon outside of God. Then, of course, you get to Genesis 11, and you've got the story of the Tower of Babel, which Nimrod encourages them to build. The nations of the world gather there. They are in unity, but they're not in unity under God. They're in unity apart from God. And that unity is based upon following Nimrod. These nations have abandoned God and abandon the ways of God. Okay? And the capsulation of that is chapter 11 of Genesis. And the building of the tower there, in the top of that tower, they said were the signs of the zodiac. There's all kinds of stuff here that ties into this. The reading to see what happens in your life tomorrow. And so they said, let us make a name for ourselves. So evidently in human beings, there's been a desire forever to have self-identity. Let us make a name for ourselves is really about a sense of worth, a sense of self-identity. Well, when you get to Genesis chapter 12, God really abandons those nations, or he allows them to be abandoned, and says, okay, if that's what you want. So there's a whole lesson here on the power of choice. If that's what you want, God, if you insist, God will let you go that way. And so they go that way. And God says, so much for that, and calls a man and makes his own nation out of that man. And that's Genesis chapter 12. And that's Abraham. And Abraham, they're saying, let us make a name for ourselves. And God is telling Abraham, follow me, and I will make your name great. I will make your name great, and I will bless you. So a sense of self-worth, when you talk about somebody saying they feel like they're great or they are great, then there is a consciousness there that they have attained at least a significant portion of what they were born for, of what they were created for, of worth, of doing what really is substantial. And anyway, God calls Abraham, and that's where a big change starts. And so the present age starts out and in Genesis chapter 9 with Noah, and it collapses to, it defaults to wickedness. We are still in that age. The next giant upheaval, worldwide upheaval, will accompany the parousia, or parousia, as some would say, of Jesus Christ, the second coming of Jesus. And that second coming will be accompanied by all the signs that Joel talked about. It'll be accompanied by the signs in the book of Revelation. It will be accompanied by the signs that Jesus gave in Matthew chapter 24. All of those signs will accompany that second coming. So there's a lot of questions here. There's a lot of questions that people have. Where does the church fit in that? And when does the rapture take place? And what is the great tribulation? And what is the sequence of events that take place in the great tribulation? All these things and many more are things that have to at least be discussed. And there's opinions, differing opinions about these things. And so if you have an opinion, you need to be able to justify that opinion, why you think like you think. So anyway, that's what we've been working on. And I was going to tell you some other stuff was working on, but I got carried away there and didn't get to it. But anyway, stay with us. We'll talk about some other stuff too. And thank you for being with us today.